Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with a second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, November 19th. We begin with some of the funeral notices that appear in today's paper in the Decatur Herald and Review. Linda L. Cole, age 71, of Haworth, Illinois, passed away at 3:12 a.m. on Wednesday, November 8th, at her residence. Her celebration of life service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at Grace Church, 1311 West Hovey Street in Normal, Illinois. Reverend Ed Skierce and Reverend Lynn Thabarge will be officiating. Private interment will be at a later date. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday at the Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington. The family suggests memorials be made to Purdue Campus House, 1000 West State Street, West Lafayette, Indiana, 47906, or Indiana University Christian Student Fellowship, 1968 North Jordan Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana, 47406. John M. Denning, 79, of Decatur, passed away on Monday, November 16th at 5:25 a.m. in Life's Journey Senior Center in Mattoon. A service to celebrate John's life will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, November 21st, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation beginning at 11 a.m. Saturday morning until service time. Burial will be in Mount Gilead Cemetery with military honors provided by the U.S. Army Honors Team. Memorials may be made to corrections in the community, with donations being used by the Sheriff's Department for children's Christmas gifts. Ernest Lee Beasley, 60, of Decatur, passed away from this life on Thursday, November 12th, in St. John's Hospital. Homegoing celebration will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 21st, in Greater Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church. I'm assuming that's in Decatur. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. The family of Ernest Lee Beasley has entrusted the care of their loved one to Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. 2091 North Oakland Avenue in Decatur. Akifa Jody Mylove Johnson, infant daughter of Danielle R. Rice and James Lavelle Johnson, was placed in the loving arms of Jesus on November 12th in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Cremation will take place at Graceland Fairlawn Crematory, and there will be no public services. Pearl Myers, Ma, 97, of Decatur, died at 3:24 a.m. Tuesday, November 17th, in her home. Funeral service to celebrate her life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 21st, at Life Foursquare Church, 2954 West Ash, Decatur, Illinois, with the pastor Steve Holm officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour before the service time at the church. Burial will take place in Graceland Cemetery in Decatur. Memorials may be made to the Life Foursquare Church. Tanzia Slogan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. Etta E. Kirby, 98, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, November 15th, at McKinley Court Nursing Home. Graveside services to celebrate the life of Etta Kirby will be held at 1:30 p.m. Friday. That's November. That's tomorrow, November 20th, in Fairlawn Cemetery. Visitation will be from noon to 1 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Burial will be in Fairlawn Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the women of the Moose Chapter 36. Norma Lee Beck Strombaugh Culbertson of Shelbyville passed away on November 17th at 10 a.m. in her home surrounded by her family. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 21st at Lockhart Green Funeral Home in Shelbyville with the Reverend Darrell Hinkle officiating. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. prior to that service. Memorial donations may be given to Shelby Christian Church or First Christian Church of Cowden. Gloria Ann Bradshaw Kick, 91, of Latham, passed away on Tuesday morning, November 17th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital with her family by her side. The family will host a memorial service to celebrate her life at 11:30 a.m. Monday, November 23rd, at Latham United Methodist Church. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the church, and a private burial will take place in Fairlawn Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Latham United Methodist Church or to the Latham Fire Department. The family of Gloria Bradshaw Kick is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Brenda Sue Wilson, 63, of Argenta, passed away at 9:35 p.m. November 14th at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. A service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, November 21st, at the Thomason Cemetery Chapel in Wayne City, Illinois, with visitation 2 hours prior to that, with the Pastor Gary Bowerly officiating. Burial will follow at the Thomason Cemetery in Wayne City. Visitation will be held from 5:30 to 8 p.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, November 20th, at the Argenta Baptist Church in Argenta. Calvert Funeral Home in Argenta is in charge of the arrangements. Memorials may be directed to St. Jude Children's Hospital or the Shriners Hospital for Children. Leona Gertrude Schaefer of Pena passed away on Sunday, November 15th, in Prairie Rose Healthcare Center in Pena. Memorials may be made to the Carnegie Schuller Library in Pena or to the Pena Education Foundation. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, November 21st, in McCracken Dean Funeral Home at 11 a.m., with Reverend Robert A. Minor officiating. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until the time of the service. Burial will take place in Mound Cemetery, Pena. Some of the services that were scheduled to take place today include Irene Everhart, 80, of Decatur, 11 a.m. in Church of the Living God, PGT Temple 1. Paul D. Grimes, 68, of Moequa, 10 a.m. in Seitzer Funeral Home in Moequa. Carl Richard Dick Presley, 82, of Warrensburg, 10:30 a.m. in Warrensburg United Methodist Church. And Lorna C. Wright, 90, of Decatur, 11 a.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Funerals that are pending include Danny R. Hopwood, 70, of Fillmore, who died on Tuesday, November 17th. Arrangements are being handled by the Miller Funeral Home in Ramsey. Elizabeth A. Betty Krushash, that's K-R-U-S-H-A-S, 89 of Decatur, died on November 5th. The Buchanan Cody Funeral Home in Jacksonville, Illinois, is in charge of arrangements. And Ruby I. Phelps, 83, of Shelbyville, who died on Tuesday, November 17th. Lockhart Green Funeral Home in Shelbyville is in charge of those arrangements. We turn now to the opinions page for the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up their daily editorial. It carries the headline, Decision Limits Hazardous Waste at Landfill. It's been a long time coming, but a stop sign finally has been erected in the ongoing battle over Clinton Landfill. The landfill, owned by Peoria Disposal, sits atop the Mahomet Aquifer, a huge underground lake that provides drinking water to 15 central Illinois counties. For years, Peoria Disposal has tried to get permission to add a waste disposal cell in which it could bury hazardous waste, including polychlorinated biphenyls, also known as PCBs, which are a known carcinogen. Opponents, and there were many, worried about the potential for the hazardous waste to make its way through subsoil into the aquifer, poisoning the water supply for hundreds of thousands of people. The city of Decatur does not receive water directly from the aquifer, but could use the water in an emergency situation. Macon County governments and legislators have supported efforts to limit hazardous waste stored at the landfill. But last week, Attorney General Lisa Madigan announced an agreement in which the landfill would have to get permission from local government before accepting certain kinds of chemical waste, and banned outright the landfill's ability to accept manufactured waste from gas plants. Quote, Clinton Landfill attempted to evade state law by not seeking local approval to accept certain chemical waste, Madigan said in a statement. She continues, this action will prohibit the landfill from receiving hazardous waste, and it protects the public's right to be heard before chemicals are accepted by landfills in their neighborhoods. The landfill has been working since 2007 to obtain a permit from state and federal agencies to store PCB industrial waste. Last spring, the federal EPA designated the aquifer as a primary water source, which would put further limitations into place. Around the same time, in a separate move, Illinois lawmakers and Governor Bruce Rauner worked to approve a new law that barred the dumping of manufactured gas plant wastes at municipal landfills. From the beginning, the dispute over the landfill was twofold: the type of the waste involved and a long history of decisions by the DeWitt County Board, whose checkbook gets a deposit from every load of waste dumped into the landfill. The consent decree announced by Madigan puts decisions back in the hands of local government, which has a tremendous responsibility for all sorts of decisions. This is a second chance for local lawmakers to use the utmost caution in future decisions involving water, air, and land. The decree and the legislative decisions that came before it are the results of work done by everyday people who come together to work for a common cause. We congratulate them on a job well done. Another featured editorial is written by a national columnist whose name I cannot really see. I'm sorry about that. It's a woman. The column carries the headline, Remember Our Values During Refugee Crisis. We shouldn't be surprised that many Americans fear the fresh arrival of Syrian refugees in the wake of last week's Paris slaughter by jihadists, including at least one who appears to have entered Europe posing as a refugee. It's pretty natural. Horrified by the savagery perpetrated on hundreds of civilians enjoying a Friday night, people think no Syrians need apply here. What they mean, of course, is no jihadists here. Agreed. There's no guarantee there are none here now, but why take a chance? If ever there was a case for abundant caution, it would seem to be now. Except for the fact that what is being proposed by several governors and politicians, including a few presidential candidates, is morally reprehensible, un-American, and in some instances legally untenable, if I may be blunt. Fear does strange things to people. What happened to our admiration for Franklin Delano Roosevelt's call to courage? The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. By recent counts, at least 27 governors have vowed to not allow any of the 10,000 expected Syrian refugees to settle in their states. Legally, governors can't prevent the free movement of people once they are granted refugee status by the federal government. So this is political posturing, unless the governors intend to take up arms against the feds, which would be especially interesting to the Islamic State. Meanwhile, several contenders for the presidency have resorted to some rather bizarre interpretations of the Constitution, showing either a worrisome lack of understanding or some unremarkable thinking. Ted Cruz, who presumably knows better, has suggested that we should allow only Christian Syrians and not Muslims to enter the U.S. Cruz promises to introduce legislation along these lines. As President Obama pointed out, we don't do religious testing here. Not to be outdone, however, Donald Trump has said he would even consider shutting down mosques, presumably because they might be preaching on American values. Where was he when Westboro Baptist Church was spewing hatred toward gays, or when Terry Jones, pastor of the Dove World Outreach Center, wanted to burn Qurans? The great thing about America, we'll let any old crank preach his own gospel from any fruit crate or mosque, though not on college campuses, where privileged children hide from mean ideas in safety zones. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, apparently intent on displaying just how tough he is, said he wouldn't even let in Syrian orphans under age 5. Both he and Ben Carson say they don't trust our government to properly vet refugees. Into this moral morass wanders at least one rational man, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who has suggested only that we temporarily pause our refugee program, perhaps to recover from the horror and clear our minds. Being lowest in the polling frees one to be rational about this. Obviously, political polling indicates that the Republican base, already unhappy about ineffective immigration policies, approves of such draconian measures. They figure if the government can't prevent millions of people from entering the U.S. illegally or staying past their visas, then how can we be sure they won't let in a few jihadists among the refugees? It's a fair question that deserves a serious, responsible answer. But it is unfair to label people as anti-immigrant or Islamophobic when their legitimate concerns are about rule of law and staying alive. Anyone who isn't concerned about the promised Islamic caliphate at the point of a spear, possibly with your head on it, has better drugs than I do. From Turkey on Monday, President Obama defended his policy in Syria and said he won't engage in another ground war in the Middle East. Obviously, referring to our attempt to impose democracy in Iraq, he said that freedom from ideological extremism has to come from within, quote, unless we're prepared to have a permanent occupation of these countries, end quote. Only the most hawkishly delusional would disagree with this assessment. But freedom from slaughter is something else, is it not? Thus far, more than 200,000 Syrians have died. How many does it take to stir our moral outrage? When does someone else's civil war become our problem? And pointedly, does helping victims by killing Muslim warriors reduce or increase the likelihood that radicalism will cease or decrease? These are all tough questions without clear answers, but our values and principles can help guide us through deliberations. Once we retreat from those values, we will have compromised and potentially lost what there is left to protect. Let's turn to letters to the editor. Our first was signed by Rich Starshack, and it carries the headline, Thanksgiving, a good time for starting over. Thanksgiving is a great holiday, an awesome way to say thank you to friends, family, neighbors, parents, and God. Thank yous include a lot of people. If I could change one thing about this holiday, however, it would be to have the opportunity to reach out to those who are, for one reason or another, not part of that list of folks I get to thank. It may be a divorce, a past argument, a misunderstanding, miscommunication, or simply that time has drifted us apart. I would love to see Thanksgiving combined with a time specifically for making amends and starting over, maybe by celebrating the special day, Thanksgiving, during something like a reconciliation week. This just might give me enough reason to call, text, write, or get together simply to say, I'm sorry, can we start over? I can't think of a better time of the year to make contact with that family member, old friend, or disgruntled neighbor. Maybe a little motivation would help. A reason to do the right thing. A letter to the editor, signed by Rich Starshack of Decatur. Our next is a letter written by Charles Dilly of Taylorville. Towed car leaves bad impression on visitors. My wife and three friends come to Decatur about once a month for lunch at a downtown restaurant, and last week came out after spending $50 to find their car towed away. The lot on the corner of Main and Main Streets was not posted in the area they parked. After informing the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce, their reply was, "Oh, we get lots of complaints about that lot." Well, nothing was done. How do you think these four women felt to walk two blocks, find your car gone, then pay $155 to get it out of storage? Also, Decatur has an 11% tax on food, and now they want to add 5 cents to the gas tax. Now, do you think they will ever go to downtown Decatur to enjoy a meal? This is to let people know about this parking situation on the corner of Main and Main Streets. I'm not sure where Main and Main is, but anyway, I would ask the police, the chamber, or a city council member if they could take time to check this out and the business to post signs on the west side of this lot. A letter to the editor, signed by Charles Dilly of Taylorville. We go over now to the Decatur Tribune and pick up an article there about city council and talking about revenues to fund priorities. Decatur City Council members on Monday voted against increasing liquor license fees as part of a series of revenue enhancements to fund recently announced community priorities, while tabling votes on two other items for further discussion at a later date. Officials tabled a vote on the creation of a city video gaming license and an associated $750 per machine fee, and on implementing a local motor fuel tax of 5 cents per gallon for non-diesel fuel and 1 cent per gallon for diesel fuel. Members were looking to discuss, among other items, how much of a tax should be levied, if any, or fees implemented, and specifics as to how any funds collected might specifically be expended. A recommended increase in liquor license fees from $2,000 to $5,000 for most license classifications, from $1,400 to $3,500 for Class N licenses, and from what is now $6,000 to $10,000 for Class P licenses was defeated. All three revenue streams were introduced to help pay for community priorities recently reintroduced publicly, but which have long been issues in Decatur, including community cleanup and redevelopment, declining property values, and roadway improvements. Any of the revenue sources, if approved, are to be tied to specific line items for the purposes identified and not get redirected into the city's general fund for other expenses. And in The City Beat, Paul Oz, the editor's column, there is a piece that carries the headline, "Ouch! City Manager Tim Gleason's three proposed revenue enhancements took a beating at Monday night City Council meeting." The council chamber was overflowing with a crowd that arrived to protest the proposed 5 cent gas tax, huge increase in liquor license fees, and creation of a video gaming license and an associated $750 per machine fee. The council rejected the increase in liquor license fees and tabled the gas tax and gaming license votes. "I think that if the two tabled proposals pass at a future council member," oops, and the last sentence is obscured, darn it. "At a future council meeting, they will be something proposed." I'm sorry about that. So it sounds like the straight facts there versus an interpretation of how that went. See if we've got some new letters to the editor there. I don't think we've got time, but there are apparently be needs to there is quite a need for the VFW Post 99 needs some financial help and materials for a new location. Sorry we couldn't get to that. But if you want more information, I think you can call Richard Cairns, who is the post commander, at 428-6811. Wow, this second half hour just flew by. We're out of time, so we'll have to bring this to a close. This has been Ruth McCauley reading news from the Decatur area for Thursday, November 19th. It's been a pleasure as always. I look forward to reading with y'all again. And until that time, y'all take care.